Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Wednesday, March 24th. There's good news and some bad news if you have student loans. It depends on who you are. Yesterday, President Biden reversed a Trump Education Department policy that will allow up to $1 billion in student loans to now be written off for students who had been defrauded by for-profit schools. And COVID relief bills have included suspending interest accrual and payment requirements for many federal student loans. That's now extended through September. But while those actions are helping many of the borrowers who are struggling to pay off the sometimes crippling debt in the sometimes financially crippling pandemic, they don't cover everyone, including at least one of our own here at WNYC. Maybe you saw the New York Times op-ed last week by Molly Webster, senior correspondent at Radiolab. The title, "I've spent $60,000 to pay back student loans and owe more than before I began." She shared her particular story, but it's bigger than one person, and she joins us now to talk about her story and that of the millions like her ineligible for federal relief. Hi, Molly.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good. And you called your student loan debt your secret shame. So you want to start at the beginning with what you borrowed and when?
Yes, let's bring this shame to light. So basically, I went through undergrad where I got a degree in biology, and then I went through grad school where I got a degree in science journalism, and I came out of those two institutions with $78,000 in loans. And basically, you get into repayment. You can use, you know, economic deferment for a while before you have to start paying back. But then once all of the loans came due, the reality of those loans became very clear, which is some had interest rates on the federal loans that were as low as like 2%. And then a bulk of the loans sat at like 6.8 and 8.55. And so suddenly having all those loans due just like kicked off a cycle of how am I going to pay for these things? And if I can't pay for all of them, then what happens? And in that cycle, my balance went up and up and up and up and up. And so at the end of the day, I've paid $60,000 into the $78,000 worth of debt, and I still owe $100,000.
Oh, wow. And so you thought, I know, I'll go to work for Radiolab and get rich. Ha, 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 ha.
Yeah, thank you, public radio listeners.
you call your student loans Goldilocks loans in your piece because they aren't quite private and not quite public, which makes them ineligible for COVID relief. They're just sort of reverse Goldilocks. Explain their hybrid nature.
Yeah. So the way the loans work is the loans I have are actually federal loans. They're subsidized and unsubsidized, like Stafford loans. These are very familiar terminology if you go into education and you need a loan to get through a program. And so, but the particular program that I signed on to is something called the Federal Family Education Loan Program, or FEFL is what everybody calls it. And so these were federal loans that were given to borrowers, but were given by commercial banks and were backed by the federal government. And there's other federal loans that were actually given directly from the Department of Education. And so this batch of FEFL loans in which you sort of have a commercial lender giving you a federal loan lasted for about 25 years. And then in 2010, when Obama and his administration sort of undertook things like the Public Loan Forgiveness Program, they also made moves that said, okay, we are no longer going to have commercial banks in the federal loan business. So moving forward from 2010 on, if you get a federal loan, it will be from the federal government. And if you get a private loan, it will be from a private bank. And then that left all of me and like my fellow people who also had these loans that were commercially given but federally owned. And what the government did there was they bought some of those loans back from the commercial banks, so they became Department of Education loans, and others they did not buy. And actually, they did not buy like 6 million of them. And so that's the Goldilocks loan. It's a loan that was promised as a federal loan, was given by a commercial bank, and then in 2010, with policy changes, kind of was abandoned by the federal government, or exists in this like weird second federal type loan space, which I call the Goldilocks loan, in that it's like not quite private, it's not quite federal, and it definitely doesn't help anybody.
Yeah, but it's reverse Goldilocks, because instead of being just right,
it's
just wrong.
Yeah.
And I gather it's not just the relief in the CARES Act that loans like yours aren't eligible for either. Aren't there other options, like tying payments to income with full forgiveness after 25 years?
Well, what I bumped up against with the CARES Act when my loans didn't qualify for the CARES Act was a surprise, but it wasn't the first time my loans hadn't qualified for something. And so I first bumped into this when the loans didn't qualify for the Public Loan Forgiveness Program, which is like if you work in a nonprofit, you could clear loans after, 10 years of steady payments. And the bureaucratic reasons for why one falls into some of these programs and not others are pretty complicated. But by the time I got to the CARES Act, I just thought, why am I never qualifying for federal relief? Which is what made me start then doing some more thorough reporting to actually figure it out, and realizing, oh my gosh, like everything changed in 2010 and I'm caught in this loophole.
Is there a way out?
Is there a way out? That is a complicated question. So there's an option for some people who are in this space where they can do something called a direct loan consolidation, which is essentially applying to have the federal government buy back your loan, which they kind of originally owned and should still own, but don't. Not everybody qualifies for that, though. And there are trade-offs with that direct loan consolidation. For example, like with the loans that I have left, if I was eligible for a direct loan consolidation, the way that they determine the interest rate of that consolidation is a weighted average of all of the interest rates you have and the different principles you have on all those interest rates. And so for me, if I did a direct loan consolidation, I would consolidate at a little over 7% on the loans. And so then you think, okay, at that point, should I just go to a private bank and just like officially pull these out of a federal system and get a variable interest rate that's like kind of based on my credit score and would be mm-hmm. much lower?
Can President Biden change a rule to fix this? Because I'm sure he would not. Maybe a reporter will ask him this question at his first presidential mm-hmm. news conference tomorrow, but I'm not sure that it'll make the cut. But I gather you went public with your own story to draw attention to this situation. These particular student loans fall through the COVID relief bill's cracks.
Yeah.
Can he do it?
He could potentially do it. I mean, it's a president. I mean, listen, I'm not a politician or an economist by any stretch of the means, but I do have a call in my article, which is for the Biden administration and for Congress to fully recognize that this second type of federal loan exists. It's frankly, when you talk about the student loan system, you talk about federal loans and private loans. No one's saying, oh, actually, there's also this like third type of loan. And that borrowers need to know that. And the reason we have this third type of loan is because of previous White House policies. And so I think there is a real way for the White House to figure out how to fix the policy. And I also think there's probably a much larger conversation to also be had about interest rates that are set by Congress, right? Like every time I log into my student loan account, there's a bunch of red fonts that are bulleted, that are boldface, that let me know I can't negotiate my rate because it's set by Congress.
Okay, all you White House correspondents listening out there right now, ask Molly's question at the news conference tomorrow. Danielle in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. You ready to commiserate, Molly? Danielle, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Brian. Hi. Yeah, I'm so honored to be on. Thanks for taking my call and putting me on. I was telling your screener that we just found out on Sunday that my wife has one of those Goldilocks loans, as she called them. where she took out the loan with the federal government as an undergrad, and it's since been sold to a private company. And so now she has this privately held federal loan that doesn't qualify for any relief. And we also are, she works a job where she would ordinarily qualify for public service loan forgiveness, but because of the way that they sold off this loan, which, you know, is not what she agreed to when she took it out, we've just been kind of stuck, and we're like kind of really unsure with the rest of our loans how we'll ever be able to pay them off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so interesting. I have been hearing from a lot of people since the essay published who are swimming, like anyone from $78,000 and they've put $50,000 on, and they very similar situation to mine. They can't get through it, to friends whose loans have ballooned in various ways to $200,000 or $300,000, or just think, I'm going to be paying this loan till I'm 85, even if it's still kind of, you know, below $100,000 at this point. I just can't figure it out.
Elizabeth on the Lower East Side, you're on WNYC. Hi, Elizabeth.
Oh, hi. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Hello?
Yep,
can
we
you
got you.
Me?
Yep.
Okay, good. So I'm calling because, you know, my story, as you can imagine, goes back a ways, but I'll try to cut to the chase. Which is that I was in grad school supporting a family of three with my student loan, which I was taking out about $8,000 a year. And then it took me 8 years to finish my dissertation. And when I finished, of mm-hmm. course, it went into having to be paid. So I made 48 payments at the minimum amount and ended up at that point owing more than I had borrowed and feeling like I was swimming in debt. So I had a recommendation to consolidate my loan in my Fed loan and apply for public service loan forgiveness because I'm teaching at an urban private college that works with first-generation college learners, and so mm-hmm. I qualified. Now, if I had been a public school teacher working with the same population at about the same age of people in high school, I probably would have had the loan wiped out. However, because I work at a private college with a low salary, I still need to pay for 120 months, which is a wonderful thing. It's a lower amount than I would otherwise be paying. But at this point, you know, I went back to grad school kind of later in life, and I'm going to be at retirement age when this thing is wiped out. So I'm going to be paying monthly. And again, I think my loan now is in different hands than the federal government, so I don't qualify for any kind of relief.
Was any of this something you could anticipate? I mean, the pandemic aside, but the way this has gone financially for you, is there a lesson in your experience for others before they do it?
A lesson? I guess, you know, okay, I can hear the judgment in your voice, but...
No, I mean, it could be a policy lesson, you know.
A policy lesson. Well...
Or a personal lesson.
I would say that matriculation and fees at a doctoral level should not be have to be paid. And I think that mm-hmm. That loan relief, you know, there shouldn't have been interest on it. And then, you know, I would probably have been able to pay back what I borrowed, but at this point, I owe a lot more than what I borrowed. Mm-hmm. So,
Elizabeth, thank you. And let me get Molly to comment on that. We're going to run out of time in a few minutes. But I think there's at least one parallel with your story, mm-hmm. if I understood her story well, and I realized there were some moving parts there. But I think one reason you wrote that you're in the boat you're in with having paid so much and still owing so much more than you borrowed is because of deferments, where you can stop paying but interest keeps accruing.
Yeah, part of what happened to me, and this is interesting because they say, you know, if you get a federal loan, you'll have more repayment options, right? One of those repayment options is something called forbearance, which is you cannot pay the monthly payment, you won't be put into default, but the interest that accrues that month will be added to the principal, driving your principal higher, then your next monthly payment is technically going to be higher. And that system was often presented as a relief, like like even on the student loan website, it's like, do you need temporary relief? Maybe you should try forbearance. And you think you don't really realize what you're fully walking into. And then it just makes me think like, is that really our best repayment option? I mean, even there are income-driven repayment options, but even with those, it felt like it wasn't actually based on what my income was. It was like based on, like, if you had to pay for no other expenses, how much could you put on student loans? And so it was still out of my reach, even as income-based repayment. And then so I thought, okay, to not default, I'll forbear, and tumbled down the hill.
And I was thinking of something like that, listening to Elizabeth's story, not judging her when I asked about how much of it was foreseeable, but I understand from your story that these hardship deferrals, which are supposed to be trying to take it easy on students in certain respects, can have these consequences with interest accumulation, partly because they're not spelled out before you agree to them.
A part of it is it's not spelled out. Part of it is you know, how much did I fully take on understanding the compound interest and what was really happening. Part of it was like the ease with which it was like I could forbear and then like, you know, go watch a television program. You know, like it was not a complicated system or presented with all the trappings of what's to come. And I think also there's just like this question of and I said this in the piece, is there was a time when having a federal student loan really meant something. It meant like a certain level of protections. It meant like a certain options on repayment programs. And I think for me, philosophically, like as I'm writing this piece, it's like a question of, do federal student loans still mean that?
Yeah. And in our last half minute or so, I don't know if you've read the comment section of your Time's op-ed.
You know, I dipped in and out.
Sometimes it's good to avoid, right? Like Twitter.
Yeah, but there are friends screen.
There are those who take issue with anyone wanting to get relief from debt that they feel that you freely took on. And there are those angry that you aren't demanding canceling all student debt. So beyond this loophole that you've identified, have you given some thought to what student loan relief could do? 20 seconds.
Yeah, I think I don't think any of us should be naive. Like some of us borrowed money, there's probably going to be a cost attached to that. Does the cost need to be 8%? Probably not. Could there be better payment option systems? Yes. Should my federal government have changed the rules on my loan midway through my loan? No. Also, I think colleges and the federal government can move more towards grant funding programs and less towards loan programs. Mm-hmm. Also, why is college so expensive? And change the interest rates. Those are my questions. Those are my thoughts.
Molly Webster, in real life, senior correspondent for Radiolab and now writer of a New York Times op-ed on student loans. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Brian.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.